Well, hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. Our apologies, we've not been able to bring you many podcasts over the last 2 weeks or so, but we have been up the highways and byways of the UK because the 100 has started. We are 8 days in and we have both managed to catch up with each other at Lords, even though we're not together all the time, which disappoints us because we like it and we want to give you more pods as well. But overall, we're delighted to be together here at Lords. So, Lids, first 8 days of the 100, what say you?
Well, I think it's been brilliant, to be honest. Yeah. I think the good thing that we haven't been together too much is we've actually been able to probably watch every single team play.
Good
so
point.
We can see where they're all
There's
at.
There's an underlying message, I reckon, that you're just giving me there. But carry on. Carry on. None taken.
I think in terms of the cricket that we've seen, I think it's been brilliant. There's obviously been a tie already. Today we've just had, or we've seen a brilliant run chase by the Welsh Fire. They chased down 150 here at Lords, thanks to Hayley Matthews, 78 off, I think it was 46 balls or in and around those numbers. And that is the one thing that I love about this competition, is that it has genuinely drawn in the best players from around the world. So yes, you want to see sides build momentum, you want to see everyone chip in and perform, but actually what you can't beat is the best players in the world single-handedly winning a game for a team.
It was funny enough, I was at the draft and sort of every pick that came in, and we knew who was available in the draft, and then Meg Lanning gets selected, and then Ash Gardner gets selected, and Beth Mooney gets selected, and all of these players that are coming in, Chamari Atapattu was selected, and you're like, that's brilliant, we know they're coming.
Yeah.
But you kind of don't believe it until you see them. And that is the beauty of the women's game, is the fact that they have got such weight, such credibility, and this is the absolute cream of the crop who are in this competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And you only have to look at someone like Meg Lanning. The 100, I'm pretty sure, will be high up on her list.
Mm-hmm.
It will be WPL, I'm sure. Obviously, Big Bash will be in there. But the 100, for her now, she's obviously making a living from franchise cricket. This will be one of her go-to competitions, because at the moment the ECB are investing and they're playing the payers what they should be paid, and it is only going to go up. And so you just hope that they continue to compete with the WPL and the WBBL, which I think at the moment it's doing. Yes, it won't be the WPL money at the moment. I don't think we can expect that, but it will continue to go up and it will continue to present, obviously, the opportunities for the best players in the world.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the other thing the 100 has going for it, in fact, all of those competitions we mentioned, is that there is actually nothing battling with it.
Yes.
You look in the men's competition, and there are two or three leagues, I think the Canadian league's going on, ML, Major League Cricket has just finished, the Lanka Premier League I think was around, so there's so much congestion in the men's game, whereas there seems to be a dedicated window for the 100 for the women, the WBBL and the WPL, and for all of those competitions, it is vital for their own success to be able to draw those big names. So granted, Meg Lanning might not be getting the money that she is in the WPL, but she's not doing anything else. So even though it's not the kind of financial reimbursement that she would get in India, it's still well worth her while. Do you reckon, and I don't know, but do you reckon, given what, you know, given India and the WPL, and it is, you know, we're talking big money here.
Yeah.
You know, Nat Sivabrunt's on £320,000. Smriti's on a little bit more than that. Ash Gardner is in that kind of ballpark. Sophie Eccleston, £200,000. Now, the top bracket here in the 100 is £50,000. And I can foresee the WPL getting bigger, more teams coming, more finance given, television contracts and all of that sort of stuff. So that 50 grand might have to move in some point in the future.
Yeah, I think it will. And I suppose the other element to throw into this is the whole rumour mill that is the 100 and the possibilities of teams being sold and to private corporations or franchises, whatever it may be. And if that does happen, I just wonder if actually, though, if it, say, Mumbai Indians buys one of the teams here, actually they might be in a position to pay the women more and therefore compete on a better level with the women and the men in terms of drawing the best players in. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how things turn out. But I think from, you know, this year's point of view, I think I'm just muddling up my words.
Well, but we're spoiled. We really are spoiled, and when it comes to the women's competition, I'm, you know, sort of foaming at the mouth, waiting to see some of these battles now. For argument's sake, at the time of recording, which we are now, Shabnam Ishmael didn't play, but we're seeing Shabnam Ishmael bowling to Laura Wolfhart, to Beth Mooney, to Meg Lanning. Lauren Filer's getting that opportunity. We're seeing internationals going head to head, and we're seeing some sensational cricket. Now, I'm going to try and do this at the time because I have a league table in front of me. However, it's not an up-to-date league table because the Welsh Fire won today, thanks to Hayley Matthews' brilliant 70-odd, and she, even though she was dropped on 42, she got that life and saw the Welsh Fire home, where, let's be honest, the London Spirit were favourites at the halfway stage. So the Spirit have won 2 and lost 1. The Welsh Fire, the same, won 2 and lost 1. The Oval Invincibles, they've won both of the games that they have played, although they play tomorrow, which is Friday as we're speaking at the moment. It's a little bit of a concern if you are a Southern Brave fan, because the Manchester Originals have just beaten them. Laura Wolfhart knocking off 130-odd required for the Manchester Originals. They are 2-1 as well. The Southern Brave have lost 2 and tied 1. Not necessarily what you would expect from a side with the strength of the Southern Brave.
No, I'm just looking at that at their side, and obviously you look at their opening partnership, Maya Bouchier and Danny White speak for themselves. Obviously you've got Georgia Adams in there, who's captain and more than experienced in that role. I suppose from an overseas point of view, they've got Chloe Tryon. We know what she can do, a hard hitter, offers you overs of left arm spin. Got Charlie Knott as well, and then they have Lauren Cheetle. So when you compare those three overseas players to some of the other sides, I just wonder if there isn't enough experience and depth. That's taking nothing away from
but
those
you
names.
Look at Charlotte Edwards, if she's not on texting Smriti going, are you fit to play, are you ready to go, because she was due to come in after the Asia Cup, which Sri Lanka will just go off at a slight tangent for the moment. Sri Lanka beating India in the Asia Cup final, which is an enormous victory for them, Chamari and her side, and how well they have advanced over the last 18 months or so, ever since we saw them here, really. Yeah. So a huge fillip for Sri Lanka, but the Indian players, Deepti Sharma was here today, Smriti Mandana coming over to the Southern Brave. Boy, do they need her.
They do, and they really need to turn things around quickly, because it's such a cliche thing to say, but having been in something like the WPL, if you don't start well, it's scary how quickly you can start doubting yourself as a side. Whereas if you start well, the confidence within the group, everything that you're doing, the time that you spend with each other, everyone's enjoying each other's company. But it's very, very different when you're not winning. So, yeah, I mean, from a Southern Brave point of view, just hope they can turn things around quickly.
Yeah, the Oval Invincibles, of course, they, you know, Marizanne Kapp, and you look at Lauren Winfield Hill, and we saw them the other day, actually, in the game down at Cardiff. And again, it was a relatively low scoring affair, and but the bowling attack that you look at, they have, and I just think they are a well rounded side, coached by a guy who knows women's cricket very, very well in John Batty. Alice Capsey is having an excellent season so far. Just a quick word on the Welsh Fire, because granted they are 2 wins and 1 defeat, I just love the way that they are put together as a side. I know Shabnam Ishmael wasn't playing here, but having Jess Jonathan, they did so well last year, missed out in the eliminator. They played the eliminator, rain succumbed their chances to reach the final. But they look like a side who are now ready to go that one step further, and Jess Jonathan might be one of the missing pieces of that puzzle.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, if I was recruiting a team and I was looking at overseas players, someone like Jess Jonathan would be very high on my list.
Me
because
too.
She's opened the batting. We've seen her open the batting for Australia in T20 World Cups. She comes in the middle order. She bowls you brilliant overs at the death in the power play. She is such a versatile player. And I think we have to also give credit to Tammy Beaumont as a captain as well.
Yes, I agree.
I know she's never been in the mix as an England skipper, and for various reasons, but I've I've been with Tam as she's developed as a cricketer with Kent and obviously England, but her, she has got a very good cricket brain and she is always one step ahead. So I think that's another thing to throw into the dynamic. And then you have people like Sophia Dunkley. You also have to look at the other storylines around players' current situations.
Agreed.
Sophia Dunkley is praying that she gets on that plane to Bangladesh. So I'm always keen to see what is the motivation of these players to really put in performances as well. And as you say, the Welsh Fire, I think, have played some good cricket, and obviously we've seen that today. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. And I think someone who's sort of an heralded member of that side, Georgia Davis, the off-spinner,
yes,
I think
yeah.
she has bowled magnificently so far in the competition. Watched her up in Manchester, took 2 for, then down against the Oval Invincibles, she took 3 for, yeah. she was in the wicket again today. And maybe, and this is not to take anything away from George Davis, but they've got Freya Davis in there, they've got Hayley Matthews, they've got Jess Jonathan, yeah. they've got Shabnam Ishmael, and that's a fairly strong lineup. So you yeah. so batters, opposition batters may be thinking, well, who are we going to attack? And maybe that, I think that's unfair, actually,
yes,
to sort of suggest that of Georgia Davis. I like the way she's varied her pace and her control, and I think she's had a really good 100 so far. So that many props to her. Couple of bowlers I want to talk about. Now, I don't want to be sort of, what's the word? I don't want to
I'm
be accused.
Sure.
I don't want to be accused of just focusing on England players, because there are a lot of players who are having excellent 100 tournaments at the moment. But I want to talk about Lauren Fowler, Lauren Bell. Watch Lauren Bell up at Headingley the other day against the Northern Superchargers for the Southern Brave. Took 4 wickets. Came back and bowled at the death. Now,
yes.
let's take you back 12 months when she bowled at the death in a one-day international against Australia and Georgia Wareham smashed yeah. her all round Southampton. I just think she's come up with slightly different plans, is bowling fuller with a bit more purpose rather than sort of placing yorkers. She's yeah. bowling them. The slower balls are sort of, to me, a little bit smarter as when yeah. she's bowling them. And that's a little progression. The second bowler is Lauren Fowler. Mm. Now she's getting consistent game time at the yeah. Manchester Originals, which again, will she be on the plane or not to Bangladesh?
Yeah.
We don't know, but that's got to be good for her progression too.
Yeah, I mean, she nearly closed out a game, actually. I think she was bowling her last set of 5 and she went for 4 singles, and unfortunately her last ball went for a boundary, but she bowled brilliantly. Like you say, she's got that control now. Her variations are getting there as well. I feel that England prefer Lauren Bell at the moment. I feel that's the way that they are more likely to go. But what I love is that Lauren Bell won't feel comfortable with how well Lauren Fowler is going, and I think that's the beauty of it, isn't it? The competition that we're seeing. John Lewis, I think he might have said to us when we spoke to him at the end of the international series against New Zealand, he said he wants the England players to dominate, and I think they're absolutely doing that. When you look at the leading run scorers, Nat Sivabrant is first, Danny White second, third, Sophia Dunkley fourth, Alice Capsey fifth. So you've got 4 England players
yeah.
in the top 5 leading run scorers.
And it's funny, just going back to the WPL for a moment, in the first year of the WPL, it was the overseas players that dominated.
Yeah.
In the second year, it was this year, it was the Indian players, and
yes.
that is what would have really pleased the BCCI.
Yes.
In that, you know, stars were emerging, the local talent was doing well, and that's obviously what sells tickets and
yeah.
also what gets people watching TV. So, yeah. just another aspect, those England players wanted to dominate the 100. Just quickly, the Trent Rockets, Nat Sivabrant is dominating as well, but they've only won 1 from their 3. Do you feel, just finally on this topic, do you feel actually now this is as tight a competition as there is standard-wise, and you know, when sides are going up against each other, you sometimes cannot call it?
Yeah, and that's what I like. That's what I love about this season. When you look at obviously Welsh Fire and how poor they were in
yeah.
the first 2 years, I think they finished bottom of the pile. London Spirit historically haven't been great. They've started really well. And yeah, as you say, the Trent Rockets, I think, have always been sort of that mid-table side. I fancy the Trent Rockets. I know this is a big call, but and they have to turn things around pretty quickly for that to come to fruition. But the reason why is I just love their spin attack. When you look at Kirsty Gordon, Ash Gardner, Lana King and then the youngster Josie Groves as well. I just feel in the women's game, as we both know, spin does dominate in those middle overs and even in the back end as well. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you, Dad, because it's pretty hard to call it at the
moment. 100%. And one thing as well, which is great to see things on social media and also that gets people talking about just simple things, moments. It's not some of the games you won't genuinely remember as a game, but you remember a performance or a moment. And Alana King bowling that ball to Bess Heath, which was reminiscent of the late great Shane Warne, drifting into the right-hander, turning away and clipping the top of off stump. That sort of thing gets people talking and going, whoa. Yeah. For those who have not seen the women's game or the standards or the people within it, it's those kind of moments that are really important to still keep growing of it, because you can't rest on your laurels. You've got to still keep exposing people to the quality of the women's game.
Yeah, it's really important, I think, obviously, the role that the media plays and social media. For someone like Alana King, that isn't the first time she's bowled that sort of delivery. I think earlier in the year she bowled a very similar one to Pooja Vastrika. So all the time those bites of brilliance with the bat ball or in the field are out there, it will draw more people to it. And you know, we've spent some time with Owen Morgan, who has you know really followed the game in the last 2 or 3 years and speaks really highly of it. And hopefully it gets to a point where people just start seeing it as cricket rather than women's or men's cricket.
Absolutely. Well, you raise a very good point there and a beautiful time to link into a little treat for you. Now, we would have had a interview with Hayley Matthews, the West Indies captain, but one of us forgot to collect or click the microphones in properly, and it wasn't Lydia. So we don't have that for you. What we will bring you, Hayley Matthews, at another time, because she was great to talk to, and she said she was really delighted to go on the podcast, and so fingers crossed she'll be delighted again to come on the podcast. So my apologies, Hayley, that is my fault. What we can bring you is an interview with the former England white ball captain Owen Morgan, because granted he isn't as invested in the women's game as we are, but he watches the 100 and he's also captained a lot in the subcontinent, which is where the World T20 is taking place in October in Bangladesh. And this was our conversation with him. Well, it's an opportunity to learn from one of the best, because I'm very pleased to say the former England white ball captain Owen Morgan joins us. And look, we know, firstly, thank you for coming on the Daggers and Lids podcast. We're very grateful to have you. And look, we know full well, we're not going to completely stuff you, that your main area of expertise is the men's game. But of course, we're here at the 100. You've had an opportunity to see the state of the women's game at the moment. Before we talk about the World T20, what have you made of the women's 100 so far this year?
Yeah, I've loved it. And having watched more women's cricket in the last 3 and a bit years than I've ever watched. I grew up with two sisters who were cricketers, both played cricket for Ireland. I used to open the batting with my younger sister in under 11s and 13s. So I always felt sort of across the board in women's cricket, but I never thought I'd be watching as much as I am and enjoying it as much as I am, because the quality that the girls continue to produce and grow and get better and take advantage of the platform is absolutely astonishing. And for me, it's great to watch, because it's sport has a funny role in life. It's such an escape for a lot of people out there, but the reason we should play sport is to inspire the next generation. And I believe the 100 women's has inspired a far more reaching next generation than the men's has over the course of the last 3 years. I mean, the last game here for the London Spirit broke a group stage record in 100. Over 16,000 people turned up, mid-afternoon game, and majority of them were family and young kids coming through. So I've absolutely loved it because of the quality that is being produced over the opportunity. I think the standard is continuing to get better, and the professionalism is going to a different level. We're not talking about girls or women coming in and getting equal facilities or anything. It is beyond that now. Just the quality is a joy to watch.
What's the things that have impressed you, Morgs? And I suppose the other side of that is the areas where you look at it and think, actually, that could improve a bit. Because we have to remember that the professionalisation of the women's game is very much still in its infancy. So there's obviously pros and cons with that in terms of the quality of cricket that we sometimes see.
Yeah, I'd say year one of the 100 was a bit of a free hit. Yeah. And more the opportunity, the level of growth in the game that it could create. I'd say years two and three, the fielding was way better, and the consistency of the fielding has improved quite dramatically. This year so far, it's the power, and I say that because I've sat back and watched shots that I've not seen played in the women's game in the first 3 years. More so talking about bowlers that don't have pace, they're able to access over long off and long on, which I haven't seen for a long time. Hitting from the crease, having genuine strength and power, and that's probably the professionalism that you're alluding to. It might be extra time in the gym or growing into your own body or just getting to know your body better as you do as a cricketer. But those are the probably the stages of improvement that I've noticed over the course of the 100.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we can talk to you for ages about, but we realise that you have to commentate in the next bit, and then we've got work to do. But whilst we've got you, one of our big things, of course, in the women's game coming up is the World T20 over in Bangladesh in October. And as a skilled T20 veteran and a veteran of someone who played that much in the subcontinent, England go over there, expected a semi-final minimum, I would argue minimum being a final. What works playing in the subcontinent, T20, what are the differences? How do England approach that kind of tournament in those conditions?
So it's almost the extremities stick out. So your quicker bowlers stand out, your genuine spinners that can spin it both ways or can beat both edges of the bat. The lack of bounce and the lack of pace is what stand out when you're challenged as a batter throughout. So if you're a sweeper like me and Lydia, you go further towards sweeping. If you're a person that hits dead straight, continue.
Like me. Yeah.
All straight, up and down. Yeah, absolutely. I remember my first tour there with England. I played in the 19 World Cup there. First tour there with England. I actually feel like I've spent a lot of time in Bangladesh over the years.
This is why we asked you.
Oh, yeah. But they can vary. So in Dhaka and Mirpur, the lack of bounce stands out. The more dramatic turn stands out. So accustoming yourself both as a batter and as a bowler to bowler, more so when you beat the outside edge, it's not, oh, it should have been a wicket, it's just a regulation. It's actually not the one that gets you a wicket, it's probably the one that goes on, gets you a wicket. Keeping the stumps in play for as long as you can, and as a batter, just keeping faith. You know, you might face some absolutely brilliant balls, you might hit the field a lot more than you do due to the lack of pace and lack of bounce, but trusting that you will find the gap and sticking to your plan for as long as you can are things that stand out. So that's in Dhaka primarily. I'm not sure where the fixtures are. If you move to Chittagong, it's more conditions that suit us. Good pace in a wicket, not as much turn, just a friendly batting wicket, and more so less adaptable. If you go to Sylhet and various other places, they're sort of in between. Find Dhaka being extreme on the one end, lack of bounce, more turn, Chittagong being the best batting wicket. So those are the types of conditions that you will come up against. The extra bit of power that the England women have will play in their favour. Equally, you have to go there and adapt. You know, picking and choosing when you use that power can determine how much success that you have. Equally, how you go about skinning a game, how do you use Sophie Eccleston and Sarah Glenn throughout the course of the game. It might change their role, but what they're trying to do within the game won't change at all. So how you go about winning a game will be the most intriguing thing for me.
What about from a captaincy point of view? Obviously, I feel you and Heather Knight are quite similar in that you never gave much away on the pitch, which I think is a massive super strength as a captain. How do you get to that point as a leader in terms of not being that unflappable person? How did you personally get there? Was it a journey for you, or was that how you just were naturally?
Well, it actually started here. My first year playing T20 cricket in front of a packed house, I found myself getting out early in games where I hadn't coped with what had happened. It was like I blinked and I was back in the change room. So I came up with a technique of trying to find time to breathe. So I'd go out, take guard, I'd go to square leg, and I'd read the two batters, the total, and who was bowling. And if I could do that in one breath, that meant I was in a good space. If I did that in short breaths, I would take guard again, take time, try and slow the game down to give yourself time to work.
Yes.
Because when you're young, things happen so fast. And I took that into my captaincy. It stayed with me right till the end of my career. I would always engage with the scoreboard. So, again, playing the subcontinent, it feels a lot more pressure than actually exists. So I found the scoreboard never lies. It will always teach you the reality. So if you say it over and over in your head and you do it while constantly having some breathing exercise, I always found useful. I can't speak on behalf of Heather, but I think she's a magnificent captain. And the thing I enjoy about captaining and her captaining is two distinguishing factors. There's tactics and strategy. Tactics is knowing what to do when the opportunity presents. Strategy is actually getting the game by the scruff of the neck and creating something that's not there. In Bangladesh, you can do that, particularly with the quality of spinner that England have. So creating something from nothing, even though the opposition might be ahead of the game, you could create something to a new batter or an in-partnership, just trying different things. That's what she looks for. Recognising the opportunity to do it is the key.
Well, look, we realise that your time is precious, and Lydia's even more so at this particular juncture because she's on commentary soon. But thank you so much. I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on what happens over in Bangladesh, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, I will, absolutely.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mark.
Owen Morgan, great to hear. And do you know what? It's amazing when you listen to England captains, whether it's male or female captains, and the way that they see the game. And I'm listening to him thinking, yeah, I just didn't think of that. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that either. And it, arguably, it sort of makes you think how little you know the game.
Yes, it's so
makes
true.
Makes you a bit embarrassed.
It's so true, but I thought he spoke so well. And what I love about Owen Morgan, like, I really enjoy listening to him talk about cricket, because his cricket brain, the way that he carries himself, the way that he watches the game, we're so lucky. We sit in the pod and we can just listen to him chat, we can ask him questions. But I think what he does is he just respects all types of cricket. He mentioned that he's obviously got some sisters who have probably kept him in check over the years. But he's a big fan of the women's game, and really interesting to get his thoughts about Bangladesh and how you go about trying to win a World Cup out there.
In all of the different areas where you've got the little nuances, and it's that level of detail that, of course, the coaches, I'm sure, will be going through it and stuff, but it was fascinating. Yeah. Just a little bit of news, just finally, on the women's cricket front, and that's sort of popped up over the last week and a half or so, and that's Deandra Dutton. Now, she has made herself available again for the West Indies. Your thoughts on that?
Exciting. As soon as I saw it, I thought, wow, that will only make the West Indies stronger. Assuming that she's been training, that she's been hitting balls, that she's been getting her workloads up, obviously from a bowling point of view, as long as all those boxes are ticked, I would think if you're the West Indies, you're thinking, we need to have her involved. Would you agree?
The cynical side of me says that the franchise contracts have dried up, and this is a way of getting her back in. And I totally understand that. Yes. By the way, that's not a criticism. Mm. But, you know, if you retire from the West Indies and you want to go out and perform in franchise tournaments, you can't just sort of hope for the best. You've got to go out and perform. If you want a contract for the next year or the following year. And for me, that looks, A, the West Indies are going to benefit, the women's game is going to benefit for her being a part of that side, especially in the World T20.
Yeah.
But if you want franchise contracts and you want to make some money, and she's got a limited window to do that, you've got to be playing cricket and you've got to make yourself viable again as an option.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think also another point for us to throw into the mix there is the other side of that. And if you're the West Indies Cricket Board, you're thinking, how did we get to this point where one of our premium all-rounders has ended up retiring from cricket, arguably too early? It's similar for South Africa cricket. Obviously, Shabnam Ishmael, Dane van Niekerk.
Agreed.
Who else was there? Lizelle Lee. Obviously, they've all retired from international cricket, I would argue, too early. So it's also a good opportunity for the West Indies Cricket Board to think, okay, how can we better look after our international players so that they are with us for longer, but we also have to let them go and play around these leagues? So I absolutely agree with you. It has to be a balance, I think, and it's a bit of a head scratch, I think, for the West Indies now in terms of what her international career now looks like moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, we will try and pod as often as we possibly can over the course of the 100. It is starting to rain. I apologise, and I bet you're sour that I asked that question, because we're currently getting a little bit damp, but it's not hammering it down. But thank you so much for listening or for watching, and fingers crossed we'll bring you a podcast very, very soon. But for now, it's goodbye from us.